This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It is the early week edition. I am Tim Murray and joined as always by Adam Burke, who's got his latest power ratings article up on VSiN.com and a lot of interesting nuggets certainly to unpack here with week one in the books. Nothing too crazy outside of Virginia Tech getting knocked off by Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Real quick, a couple things of housekeeping before we get rolling here on the podcast. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. Two episodes every week, the early week episode, me and Adam Burke, and then the late week episode with Matt Humans and myself, where hopefully a little bit better than what I showed and what we showed last week from our picks, as I believe I was down 1.35 units. So 2.5 and 3.5 as Georgia State covered the first half, did not cover the full game there against Georgia Tech on that split unit play. But also more college football program coming to VSiN. So if you didn't see it on Twitter at one Tim Murray, the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show will air from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. each and every Saturday, and it'll be hosted by yours truly and certainly a lot of the college football handicappers that you know and love and have heard on this podcast will be a part of that show. I can't guarantee every week, but I will be certainly knocking on their door as the year goes on. So looking forward to that. So make sure you forget all those other tailgate shows. College game day, big noon kickoff, get out of here. The VSiN College Football Tailgate Show from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, YouTube TV, and also, from what I understand, our friends in New England will be carrying it as well on NESN. So we got that out of the way. Hopefully you guys enjoy that program starting this Saturday the 8th. But welcome in Adam Burke. Adam, week one in the books, and hopefully on social media, you did not vow to eat dog poop out of a red Solo cup if Florida State lost, which they did late on Monday night.
So, Tim, I've made a lot of stupid decisions in my life. That is not one of them. I would never volunteer to eat animal feces based on the outcome of my favorite team's anything. Now, keep in mind, I'm from Cleveland, so naturally it's kind of a bad idea to bet on anything Cleveland that would require me to do something like that. But I don't know. I mean, the guy's deleted basically his entire social media footprint. So I don't know if this thing's actually going to happen, but what an asinine statement to make.
Yes, if you're wondering what we're talking about, and I would imagine most of you who follow college football saw the @321Knowles tweet saying, if Florida State loses to BC this weekend, I will eat dog shit out of a red Solo cup with a spoon and post a video of me doing it. Book it. And he has since deleted said social media account. And I believe he sent a DM to No Context Football and said, I'll catch y'all next season. My time on X is done for now. Good luck to everyone. We don't need to go much further into a crazy-ass proclamation that won't come home, even though Scott Van Pelt called him out on SportsCenter last night. What did you do with Florida State as they become just the third team since 1979 to lose their first two games of the year as a double-digit favorite? I know a number of people pointed this out. I believe Evan Abrams pointed this out. ESPN Stats and Info pointed it out. But they joined the likes of 2018 Baylor and 2015 Wyoming.
So I don't know who had a worse Monday, that guy or Florida State. I dropped him a touchdown in my power ratings. And Tim, I think the problem here is I had that line 20 against Boston College, even after making a Florida State adjustment following their performance over in Dublin against Georgia Tech. So I think I had dropped them 3 points, I want to say, in week one. I would say it's pretty unprecedented to not have a major injury and drop a team 10 points in my power ratings over the first 2 weeks of the season. And again, they played in week zero, so their first two games, at least, of the season. 7 may not be enough. I mean, DJU looks awful. This is not a fit. By the way, kind of makes me wonder about Jonathan Smith, because Aiden Childs didn't play well at all last week. But Smith got a lot out of DJU up there in Corvallis. So maybe the guy's just a miracle worker, and maybe he'll work some miracles with Childs as we go forward. But Yeah, Florida State, 7-point drop for me, easily the biggest drop of the week.
I just think back to DJ Uiagalelei's debut, COVID year at Notre Dame. He threw for 439 yards and looked like he was the next guy. And oddly enough, his first career start was against the team that he was playing yesterday in Boston College, and he threw for 342 yards in that game back on Halloween in 2020. But it's not a fit. And I'll say this, I'm not defending DJU because that touchdown pass that he missed in the end zone was just comically bad. What happened to this vaunted defensive line we were hearing about? Boston College ran all over them yesterday. Kai Robichaud, 19 carries, 85 yards. Trayshawn Ward, 12 carries, 77 yards. Castellanos, 14 carries, 73 yards. Look, I didn't give it out on the podcast, but I did take a little nibble on Florida State yesterday under 17 because I felt like, all right, this is an overreaction. You know, it wasn't as bad as it looked over in Ireland. And I'm trying early on in the year, Adam, to find those spots where maybe the market has gone too far. But I'll give you two examples. Florida State, Boston College was one. How about Nevada and Troy? That market moved a full touchdown after Nevada's performance in week zero, where they almost beat SMU. And then they go down to Troy and they beat the Trojans. So a team in Troy that had a ton of turnover from the year before, obviously lost their coach in John Summerall and brought in Jared Parker from Notre Dame. And Nevada, the Wolf Space Pack, man, they don't suck apparently, because they're 1-1, much to the surprise, I would say, of most.
Yeah, and that'll feed into one of my plays that we can talk about later on in the show, that Nevada doesn't suck. And I think there's an underrated team this week as a result of the fact that Nevada doesn't suck. But I mean, I gave the Wolfpack a 5-point bump in my power ratings. And, you know, I started my power ratings article for this week by saying one could be an outlier, two is likely a pattern. This is two good performances in a row from Nevada under first year head coach Jeff Choate. So maybe they are just better. And, you know, Brendan Lewis is a guy that probably wasn't supposed to win the job. You know, Chuba Purdy was probably going to be the starting quarterback if he wasn't hurt throughout most of August with a shoulder problem. And here they are at 2-0 with a guy who was objectively bad last year for this Wolfpack team at quarterback. So, yeah, very, very impressive for Nevada. But I want to circle back to Florida State for a second,
yeah,
because the one of the other big drops in my power ratings, North Carolina, goes down 3.5 points. I like their alt season win total over. It's still alive because they won that game against Minnesota. But between the Max Johnson injury and then also just an adjustment to them, I dropped them 3.5 points. I dropped Clemson 2 points because Georgia just dominated them in the second half of that game. NC State, I dropped 2 points because they didn't play well. They had the bulk of their offense in the fourth quarter of that game, where Grayson McCall didn't really look good for the first three quarters. I believe it was Western Carolina. Yep. They played in that one. Tim, the ACC might be bad. I mean, you know, I dropped Stanford a couple of points after their performance against TCU because while they covered, they got badly outplayed in the box score. Not that I expect much from them. And Virginia Tech, which you mentioned, huh, you know, Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt. So the ACC, and I actually downgraded Duke a little bit too. The ACC did not have a good week one.
Outside of the team being back, throw up the U, ladies and gentlemen, because they walked into Gainesville and just punked Florida. And
well, so let me ask you
I'll put my hand up real quickly. Yep, I bet Florida. I thought this was the spot. You know, everybody had been talking about Miami all offseason. No one had been talking highly about Florida. All we talked about was the schedule. I was guilty of it. And I thought, this is that spot. They're going to be fired up. They're going to come out and play well, and they did not.
So let me ask you this. In thinking about and breaking down that game, is it 50-50, 60-40, 70-30 that Miami is good or that Florida is just bad? And Billy Napier will not survive the season.
Billy Napier will not survive the season. He also can't open a bottle of water. And you know, the Florida, it's a great question to look at and pose. I came away more impressed by Miami than I did less impressed by Florida. I was unimpressed by Florida, but I thought Miami, with their speed, I thought their offensive line was phenomenal. And we had heard all about they're much better up front on the O-line and the D-line. And I thought, as good as Cam Ward was, and he's now down to 8-1 to win the Heisman Trophy at Circa, I thought the offensive line might have been the best unit on the field. I was thoroughly impressed by the Canes. And, you know, maybe that's the one big overreaction from week one, is that Miami's back and they're going to win the ACC and they're going to go to the playoff, et cetera, et cetera. But after watching that game, it's hard not to buy in a little bit to at least the talent that's on that roster. We totally understand who the head coach is and the you know, in-game struggles that he's had. But I also, you know, love the fact that they've got what seems to be pretty darn good coordinators, right? I mean, they went out and, you know, they got Lance Guidry to be their defensive coordinator, the former, what was he at, Tulane prior? Is it Marshall or Tulane? I think it meant one of those two. But regardless, I was thoroughly impressed by Miami.
Well, so first of all, I got to give props to your Notre Dame Fighting Irish, because I think they locked up a spot in the playoff with that win over Texas A&M, because the ACC is pathetic, as we've talked about already. Miami is minus 120 to make the playoff now. They get Florida A&M this week, Ball State in a couple of weeks. They're at South Florida, which could be an interesting game with Byron Brown and how good he is. But they get Vatek at home. They get Florida State at home, although, I mean, with how Florida State looks right now, who knows what that number looks like by October 26th. Louisville on the road, I think, is dangerous. Maybe Georgia Tech on the road. And, you know, I don't know what Syracuse looks like on November 30th, but Miami should be favored in every game the rest of the way. And with how bad the rest of this conference looks, I'm tempted by the minus 120. Now, the problem is, if they lose one of these games, right, can they get in as a one-loss ACC team with as bad as the ACC looks like it's going to be? That's the question that I'm kind of trying to wrestle
with. Well,
are
they going to win the conference, though? Right?
I would think so.
So
they should.
I mean, if they win the conference, then they're automatically
right?
So
yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
My question to you would be, would you rather lay minus 120 that they make the playoff, noting that the ACC looks as bad as possible, or would you rather just go the route to win
plus
the ACC at plus 180? And these odds are all courtesy of DraftKings. So, you know, as always, shop around, because, you know, I know I saw, I think it was Julian Edlow from DraftKings tweet out something to the effect of Florida State is down to 30-1. I think there's a lot of liability out there for DraftKings on Florida State. You could probably get a much longer price. I mean, if anyone bet under 9.5 wins, which was something I stared at, and I think you recommended in the guide, Adam, my God. I mean, imagine how you feel today, 2 weeks in, and they've lost to Georgia Tech and Boston College, and they still have Notre Dame, Miami, and Clemson on the schedule.
You know, Clemson's plus 300 to win the conference now, and
I'm not ruling them out, man. I'm not. I'm not betting them, but at this point, and we got a lot of football still to play, and, you know, Georgia Tech has looked decent, and maybe it was, you know, one bad game for Virginia Tech, and it doesn't matter, right, for the ACC, but at this point, I would be a bit surprised if Clemson and Miami are not playing each other in the ACC championship. But, you know, Louisville still got a shot. NC State, we'll learn more about them this weekend as they play, one of the biggest games of the weekend in Charlotte against Tennessee, who looked the part, albeit against a much inferior opponent. And that's the thing, too, Adam, is as you are doing, you know, the good Lord's work and updating your power rankings on VSiN.com, it's hard on some of these games to fully gauge what they are, because as you alluded to, NC State played Western Carolina. You know, what do you take away from that ultimately? You look at, Duke's a bad example, but Duke played Elon, and that was on Bad Beats the other night as Elon got a late field goal to get the cover there. So it's kind of hard to fully gauge, because Clemson played the number one power rated team in the country. And for the first half, it was, at least defensively, they were hanging in there, but the offense could be, once again, a concern here for the Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that Cade Klubnik is it.
Hard to disagree.
You know, and I saw a tweet, I think it was maybe from one of the PFF guys, who, you know, was like, look, I mean, Clemson's biggest problem has been they don't have Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson at quarterback. The defense did play with Georgia in the first half, but then Georgia adjusted. I mean, Georgia's just, they're too good, right? So it is one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, do I want to hold this performance against Clemson because they're supposed to be on this level and they're clearly not? At the same time, Miami might be the only team close to national prominence level in the conference. So it is tricky, and you don't want to overreact to one data point, right? I mean, Clemson plays Georgia. They get blown out in the second half. Guess what? They're not playing anybody on Georgia's level during the regular season. So, you know, yeah, maybe you don't want to discard them, but at the same time, I just, in the era that we're in with college football now and how vital the transfer portal is, I mean, how many quarterbacks that have won the Heisman or have been at the top of the Heisman list, have been invited to New York City, been favored at some time throughout the course of the season, how many of them are transfer guys, right? It's just, it's a huge part of the landscape of college football now, and Dabo doesn't do it. And that's a major problem for them that I don't know if they can overcome.
Yeah, it's a depth factor, right? I mean, you look at so many of these teams, you look at Georgia, for example, Colby Young, transfer, right? I mean, Georgia has recruited at an elite level, but they're filling the holes with transfer portal guys. Now, Miami could become the outlier where we see a team that goes full on transfer portal and ends up being successful. We haven't fully seen that just yet. Ole Miss is a team that thrives in the transfer portal. You know, we won't really know who Ole Miss is for a little bit, but you know, just running through your power ratings before we hit a break and maybe look a little bit ahead to next week. A couple teams that you upgrade. You mentioned Nevada. That was your biggest upgrade of the week, as you pointed out already. Another team that you added to the upgrade, Coastal Carolina. That was an under-the-radar ass-whooping on Thursday night that I certainly did not anticipate to see. And they went out there and just blew out Jacksonville State. Coastal Carolina went into that game as a 3.5-point underdog and won by 4 touchdowns. I mean, they hammered Rich Rod's squad. So that was a pretty impressive performance for a team that, you know, with Grayson McCall gone, with, you know, with their coaching staff up at Liberty for the, you know, 2 years removed, it feels like Coastal Carolina has fallen out of favor a little bit. That was a pretty impactful performance on Thursday night.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, if this game were to be run back again, I'd have a 7-point line swing here. I upped Coastal Carolina 4 points. I dropped Jacksonville State 3 for the way that game transpired for the Gamecocks. Look, you know, I think this is maybe an example of being a little bit more patient in college football, because I downgraded Coastal Carolina a good bit over the summer. I thought, okay, they don't have Grayson McCall anymore. The offense was nowhere near as efficient last year without Jamie Chadwell at the helm. And of course, we saw what Jamie Chadwell did at Liberty. I mean, the guy is a brilliant head coach, really on both sides of the ball, but especially on the offensive side. So I was pretty low on Coastal coming into the season. That said, I was pretty much right on the number last week, Jacksonville State -3. But Coastal came out and they just put it on them. And the offense looked really good. And so maybe when a coach leaves, like a Chadwell, that has such a complex and complicated offense, a lot of pre-snap motion, a lot of it is very reliant on the quarterback to find the right guy in space, stuff like that. Maybe it's just such a dramatic change to go back to kind of more of a, you know, traditional pro-style spread type of offense like what Trickett and Coastal Carolina have now. Maybe it just takes time. And so maybe I was a little too quick to judge Coastal Carolina, and you know, I bumped them up 4 points here in my power ratings, as I said, my second biggest jump of the week outside of Nevada. Maybe this team's just not going to be bad. And, you know, in the Sun Belt, where James Madison presumably will take some steps back because of everything that they lost, although easy win and cover against Charlotte last week. I never understood that line from the jump.
Well, and Biff Poggi, thank you to the letting us know that your whole team was hurt as well. So that
right.
was lovely.
Yeah, that certainly helps. App State's really good. But outside of that, I mean, you know, I think Coastal kind of cemented themselves as maybe the second best team in that East Division, where, of course, the Sun Belt, the only conference still using divisions this year.
All right, a couple more teams from your power ratings, and read the entire article on VSiN.com. Wyoming, Arizona State, boy, oh boy. I said this to someone during the week. Hey, the beauty of gambling is when you get something wrong, just blame someone else. And that's what I'm going to do right here. I'm going to call out JVT because he has loved this Wyoming team all throughout the offseason. He wrote up the Mountain West. I fell for it. We had Jay Sauvel in studio during media days when the Mountain West was in town. I was excited about Evan Svoboda. I know that, you know, Whaley, the running back, was hurt. All that said, holy smokes, this was over before it started. Arizona State comes out and completely dominates Wyoming, who had a total of 118 yards, turned the ball over three times. So maybe not as terrible as it looked, but Arizona State came out and waxed the floor with Wyoming as, what, a 6.5-point favorite. So that was certainly one that I had wrong here on the podcast, taking the 7 with Wyoming. Late night slate was not good for your boy. Arizona State, Wyoming, looks like you adjusted both of these teams pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, I had a good week one overall, but this was a Javier Baez level swing and miss on this game. Arizona State looked really good. Wyoming did not. And, you know, for Wyoming, I mean, new head coach, new coordinators, maybe I took for granted that everything would kind of remain pretty similar with Jay Sauvel getting promoted from the DC to the HC and then a new offensive coordinator in Jay Johnson. But I mean, Arizona State just took it to him from the jump. And hey, you tip your cap and you respect that. And, you know, Kenny Dillingham is a guy that I don't know what he'll be as a head coach, but he's a pretty good offensive coordinator and a pretty good offensive position coach in a few different places. So maybe they just have something together there down in Tempe. Maybe for Wyoming, you know, it was kind of hot, late start. I don't know. Maybe there were a couple things like that. But I dropped Wyoming 4 points. It was the biggest drop in my power ratings up until we saw what Florida State did on Monday night. And I gave Arizona State a 7 or a 3-point bump. So, again, if we were to run this one back, I'd have Arizona State minus 14 in this game. Maybe that, or excuse me, minus 10.5 in this game. So maybe that's a little bit big. Maybe it's not. But, you know, one of the things you've really got to keep in mind is, as I've mentioned already, don't overreact. It's one data point. Wyoming may be bad. We'll find out. But Wyoming may not be that bad and maybe just ran into a bad opponent, weren't prepared, didn't really know, didn't have a grasp of the offense or the defense, stuff like that. So, yeah, I gave them a drop, but it's not like I buried them, you know, thinking, oh, I'll never bet on this team again.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got to hit on USC LSU here in Vegas. That performance from Fight On as they get the win. Notre Dame Texas A&M. And then look ahead to week two of the college football season. So more to come. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast alongside Adam Burke. I am Tim Murray. Please, as always, rate, review, and subscribe. Not exactly sure when the Thursday podcast will be hitting your feed as we break down the card, but it will be Thursday, and we will keep you posted on that. Hopefully, a little video component to that as well, like it was last year. But the early week podcast, always with Adam Burke early on, and we waited for the Boston College Florida State game to conclude before getting you this podcast. I appreciate the tweet, and you can always tweet us at Skating Tripods and at One Tim Murray. Pin and Pull tweeted me on Tuesday morning, when does the new college football betting podcast drop? Your boy needs some validation for some of his potential plays. All right. Thank you, Pin and Pull. Appreciate the checking in. And normally we will get this out much earlier in the week. All right. USC, LSU, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Where do you want to go with this as both the dogs win in this one? Not big dogs. Notre Dame closes a 3-point underdog. USC around a 4-point underdog. I did end up taking some Fight On Dirty Trojans, and I took the under in Notre Dame, Texas A&M, which there was a little bit of worry at some point in that game, Adam, where I'm saying, ah, oh, man, this is totally going to go to overtime and hit the over, isn't it? But it didn't, and Notre Dame wins 23-13. So those four teams, did you do much with either of them?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Yes and no. I mean, I had Notre Dame a 1.5 point favorite in my power ratings, so I didn't really want to do too much to adjust that game because, for the most part, for the majority of the game, it was definitely kind of a toss-up situation where the game seemed like it could have swung one way or the other. So I didn't really do a whole lot to move these two teams around. Again, it kind of played closer to my expectation than the market one. I was surprised that some people bet the over in this game in the middle of the week, because that was a bet that I just, I never really could figure out. But look, I mean, you know, it's a huge win for Notre Dame. Like I said, I mean, -300 is probably cheap to make the playoff now, because they've got a win over an SEC team that should ultimately probably win 8 or 9 games, I would think.
Well, according to my Twitter feed, they'll be 6-6 if they're lucky now. So it's funny how a result happens and magically the narrative from Notre Dame's going to go to Texas A&M and lose this game because they're overrated to, well, Texas A&M stinks, they're going to suck in the SEC. Connor Wegman's not very good. I'll just point that out. And I was a little surprised by this, Adam, where it felt like there were questions about Riley Leonard, understandably so, because he didn't play a lot of football last year because he had the high ankle sprain against Notre Dame and pretty much ended the season for him. Connor Wegman didn't play a lot of football last year either, and it just felt like that was overlooked because Notre Dame had the young offensive line. I saw this stat from Pete Sampson over at The Athletic. I believe the average snap to pass for Notre Dame was like 2.13 seconds. So Mike Denbrock, the new offensive coordinator of Notre Dame, had a plan in place with a young offensive line against arguably the best defensive line they'll face all year, one of the top D lines in all the country, was get the damn ball out quick. And they did that. Riley Leonard started to use his legs. I mentioned this on Friday's show. I don't do a ton of player props, but DraftKings had Riley Leonard's rushing yards at 32 yards, which was a gift from the odds makers on that one. He finished with 63 yards and started to run the ball much more late in that game. You know, defensively, Notre Dame is one of the best defenses in the country. I think you just stop there. Offensively, we'll find out. But yeah, for Notre Dame at this point, you know, we talked about it on the podcast over the summer where I got a little creative, Adam, where I took over 10.5 wins and exactly 10 wins to create a over 9.5 win market at -$2. I feel pretty decent about where my bet is at right now because they'll be a favorite in every single game moving forward, except maybe for that last game against USC, which is looking a little bit more challenging. Miller Moss was good, man, and the defense looked improved. LSU made some mistakes certainly in that game, but I came away more impressed by USC than disappointed in LSU, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess Brian Kelly was very disappointed in his LSU team.
Yeah.
With his petulant press conference.
That was all an act.
Oh, it was embarrassing. Look, you know, I said this on the pod last week. As I started thinking more about USC for the upcoming season, I like the offense. I knew I'd like the offense. It's the Lincoln Riley offense. Like, what's not to like, right? Defensively, it was all about DeAnton Lynn and what would happen with that defense. Would they make a big step forward? And I think they played rather well in that game. So, yeah, I was definitely impressed with USC. And my line was off on that game anyway. I gave them a 2-point bump in my power ratings. You know, I don't even know if that's enough, to be honest with you, because I was really impressed with the way that they played. Look, I want to see them do it again, right? Yep. To do it in one game where you get to prep all summer long and you put all of your focus into that one, that's great. That's good. I'm glad you had that kind of performance, and maybe it does set the tone for the rest of the season. But when you're a program like USC that was, you know, very prominent in the national landscape, and then you kind of fall out of it a little bit, now I need to see that consistency that allows you to be an upper echelon type of team.
The schedule's challenging. Utah State this weekend, bye week, then you're at Michigan. The Wisconsin game maybe looks a little less daunting now. They get Wisconsin at home, and Wisconsin fortunate to beat Western Michigan at Minnesota, who looked a mess. But you get Penn State, who looked phenomenal against West Virginia. You know, there's no Oregon. There's no Ohio State. They do get Nebraska at the Coliseum, and they wrap up against Notre Dame. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a team very fun to watch, I think, moving forward here this year. Before we take a look ahead to this upcoming week's games, you've got some bets that you do like in the column. Any other takeaways from week one from a positive or a negative standpoint, Adam?
Well, there's a couple of negatives. South Carolina looked god-awful against Old Dominion.
I lost a bet with Dustin Sweetelson on that. JVT, doing his JVT ways, bullied me into taking a Barry's bet with Dustin on that. So shouts to Dustin. I will take you to Barry's at some point here in the near future. But lost that bet, as they probably should have lost that game.
Yeah, they probably should have. Lenora Sellers did not play well, especially in from a passing standpoint. They missed Xavier Legette. There's no question about that. They were +3 in turnover margin to barely win that game. And honestly, I'm concerned. When you look at the rest of South Carolina's schedule, they may only beat Akron and Wofford the rest of the way. And at that point, you know, I mean, the schedule is miserable. I mean, they have a very, very tough schedule. But 10-point
underdog this weekend to Kentucky, by the way.
Yeah, at that point, I mean, do people start kind of wondering if Shane Beamer is the guy here? I mean, I think for the most part, he's done okay recruiting, and Spencer Rattler played extremely well behind a very bad offensive line. But I think there will be some questions about that. The other one that really stood out, Texas Tech gave up 615 yards to Abilene Christian, 152-51 in overtime. Abilene Christian, as you should, went for two in the first overtime, didn't get it. Wind up losing the game as a result. But ugly performance there from Texas Tech. And one that flew under the radar. This one's not going to get talked about at all because it's a Sun Belt team. Arkansas State.
Oh, they should have lost.
They needed a 7-play, 70-yard touchdown drive in 49 seconds to beat Central Arkansas 34-31. And this is a team, I mean, remember last year they started the season getting decimated in their first two games. Butch Jones was crying on the sideline. But Jalen Rayner took over at quarterback about week four or so and was really, really good for this team. And they actually wound up making it to a bowl game. That was a really ugly week one data point for them with a team that, you know, lost a little bit to the portal, but they did bring Rayner back and should have looked a lot better than they actually did.
So I want to bring up this game because both of these games, because this leads me into one of my favorite plays of the week. And that's Oregon 24. Idaho 14. And Dan Lanning was none too pleased post game. The stats were eye opening from Dylan Gabriel, 41 of 47, 380 yards. He is Bo Nix again. They are not stretching the field vertically, but they got some guys. Tez Johnson scored a couple touchdowns in this game, 12 for 81 there. Evan Stewart, the transfer from Texas A&M, only had three catches, but the score certainly pretty stunning for a team that I think is a, I don't want to say lock, but is in a very good situation to make the playoff. And then how about the barn burner we had in Statesboro, Georgia, where he had a late touchdown? Ashton Genty of Boise State rushed for six touchdowns. And every time I turned on this game, Adam, or had it on the side screen, it was another touchdown run. I don't know how much he can do as the year goes on, but that was quite the impressive performance. 20 carries, 267 yards, six touchdowns. But Maddox Madsen, pretty big bag of And the defense for Boise State, ooh, buddy, that defense is a little bit leaky, 461 yards allowed to Georgia Southern. So this was an interesting one to me because this is a late night game on Peacock, Oregon hosting Boise State. This game in the game of the year market was 24, Adam. It got as low as 17.5 on Sunday. I laid 17.5. I would lay anything under three touchdowns. I do think this is a little bit of a market correction. That's a bit too much. And I think Oregon, now that they're motivated, and I would imagine this week of practice is not going to be fun. And I don't think Boise State's defense is ready for what they're about to see on Saturday night. So laying the lumber is not something I like to do. And I feel like more often than not, I'm not very successful at laying said lumber, but I will lay it with Oregon in this spot.
I had this one 22.5. So, you know, definitely a lean towards Oregon for me. Look, I think something else, too, that's kind of important to talk about. So Andy Avalos, who was the head coach at Boise State last year, up and I think through game 10, I want to say, 9 or 10, something like that. So he's the DC now at TCU. TCU completely suffocated Stanford on offense in that game last Friday night. I got very, very lucky to get Stanford to the window in that one. But Avalos is now the DC at TCU and had quite a good game plan in that one. So even though it was said to be a pretty toxic environment there at Boise State, you know, now we see the impact of losing a pretty smart defensive mind with their performance in that game against Georgia Southern. So it is a concern. And for Oregon, I mean, look, they were breaking in Dylan Gabriel. They had to figure some things out. Was it an ugly performance? Sure. Does 24-14 have some shock value, you know, from a sticker standpoint? Absolutely. At the same time, if you're Oregon, why would you show anything in that game? Because you should beat them without showing anything. Now, was it ugly? Sure. Was it too close for comfort? Yeah, probably. But he didn't really show anything. There's not a whole lot on film, whereas Boise State was in a track meet and they had to kind of show everything. So I think this does very much favor Oregon here. I think it is a wake-up call, and I think that they will be in a really, really strong position here to, you know, take care of their affairs. And I do like this one. I know you're not a chalk player at all, but for you to hear that you're on this one, for my power rating to line up as well, I think it definitely makes sense.
Yeah, and that'll be my only early week play. We'll have all the plays on Thursday and also on VSiN Primetime. Just quick note, VSiN Primetime, little change up of the schedule. My show will now be from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Matt Eumanns will be the constant. I'll be on Wednesday and Thursday, and JVT will do Monday, Tuesday, and Friday with them. So only early week play for me, laying it with Oregon, a couple other ones that I'm keeping an eye on, but you in the column have a couple games that you are looking at. So let's run through those games before we get out of here. What are some of your favorite plays of week two?
Yeah. So one that I recently added to the card here and looking at this game a little bit this morning, I'm going to lay the number with SMU on Friday night against BYU. So BYU, they put fine in their opening game. They played Southern Illinois. Whatever, so be it. SMU, they hung almost 60 on Houston Christian, another bad team. But we just talked about it earlier in the show. Nevada played really well, went on the road and beat Troy. Nevada's got back-to-back good data points here. Maybe they're not as bad as we all thought. And for SMU, it wasn't pretty. The 29-24 game, they had to score 16 points in the fourth quarter to win. At the same time, there was a pretty big yards per play discrepancy in that game. SMU outgained them by 110 yards. Like, it was close on the final score, but the box score kind of suggests it really wasn't actually all that close. Also, SMU ran 69 offensive plays in 23-43. So they're definitely pushing the tempo here. I just don't think BYU can hang. So I like SMU. It's a bit of a sizable number, laying 10.5. on Friday night, but I like the Mustangs in that game.
Wanted to quickly update where we stand on some of the over the summer podcast future bets. Some good, some not so good. So we gave all these out. I tweeted them out. I'll keep tabs on them all year long. The first bet was that Notre Dame over 9.5 created market. So obviously a good start there. UCLA under 5.5 wins. I don't feel terrible. I would have liked them to lose that game to my guy, Timmy Chang, who I also have over 4.5 wins when Hawaii, but UCLA. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. They went off as a 14.5 point favorite, and they were fortunate to get out of the island with a win 16-13. That team does not look very good. And I'm very curious to see how they are as the year goes on. And a week three showdown against Indiana, who did get a win, and they play Western Illinois, who is dreadfully terrible. I had a buddy of mine text me, Adam, about Northern Illinois and say that he's nervous because Notre Dame plays Northern Illinois fresh off of the big win. And I go, did you happen to look at what Western Illinois did last year? They were 0-11, and they are probably one of the worst FCS programs out there. But Northern Illinois, if those wondering, I think racked up like 700 yards of offense against Western Illinois in week one in a 54-15 win. A couple other bets that we're looking at from the futures market. Iowa gets a win over Illinois State, 40-0. We're over their win total. Indiana gets their first win of the season. We're over their win total. I'm not going to go crazy here, Adam, but if you lose week one on the road to Vanderbilt, I don't think my Kyren Drones 150-1 to win the Heisman has much legs right now.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think that one's going to be a little bit of a tough sell.
A little CLV sandwich there. Hey, we got a good number.
Hey, you know what? The sad thing is, for 100-1, you didn't even get to enjoy it for like a quarter or anything.
You didn't even get to like pretend like, oh, you know, it's down to 40. No, you lost. Yeah, lost to Vanderbilt.
No, that one was ugly. That was a very ugly performance. And again, I mean, you know, kind of a theme here, especially with my power ratings, like every team's going to play their worst game of the season at some point. Right. Maybe it was this one for Virginia Tech, who I think is a program on the rise. You know, I think Brent Pry is doing a good job. I think Kyren Drones is a good quarterback. They said he had some cramping issues in the fourth quarter of that game, which wasn't really going that well to begin with. But, you know, still something for you to keep in mind, to be sure. As far as some other plays that I'm looking at here, Army and Florida Atlantic. You know, I think Florida Atlantic is going to be a little bit overrated based off of that performance against Michigan State, where Aiden Childs didn't play well. Jonathan Smith is installing a lot of new things, a lot of new concepts. I get it. Sparty played poorly, but Florida Atlantic has not been a good program outside of a couple of Lane Kiffin seasons for a while now. I like Army in that game now, especially being over a key number. A limited number of possessions should keep points to a premium. I like Army plus 3.5 is a good bet. I actually have Army a 2-point favorite in my power ratings. And again, I was low on Florida Atlantic coming into the season, so that one definitely makes sense for me. And look, a team I was low on coming into the season last week, South Alabama, gave up like 900,000 points to North Texas. So, you know, I'm trying to stick to all the hard work, all the research I did coming into the season, and try to follow through on, you know, fading or following some of the teams that I kind of created a profile for. Florida Atlantic is a team that I want to fade. I didn't want to bet on Michigan State last week. That was a good thing. But I do want to bet against Florida Atlantic here in this one this weekend.
All right. Make sure to read Adam on vsin.com. The power ratings article will be out every, what do you do, Sunday or Monday morning?
Typically, it's going to be Sunday night.
Okay.
You know, obviously, this week we had the Monday game. I got it up on Monday morning anyway, or late Sunday night anyway, after USC and LSU. But yeah, look for it Sunday night or Monday morning. And I want to say this too, really quickly, that every week over at vsin.com, we have a hub, which is like college football week one, or well, week two schedule odds and however it's titled. It's a hub of all of our content that comes out on that sport for that week. So it's a good landing page to bookmark. We add to it as things get published, but it helps you keep everything organized and see, you know, who's written what. You can check out best bets from your favorite VSIN writer. You can look at the betting tools that we have as well. Also, some of the, you know, more in-depth type of analysis that maybe isn't pick-based, but will still help you. So we have those hub pages for both college football and the NFL available over at VSIN.com every week.
Always a great site to utilize all that we have to offer and what we've got going on, vsin.com/subscribe. Matt Eumanns and I will be back later this week. We will continue to keep things rolling. And just a reminder, the VSIN College Football Tailgate Show, hosted by yours truly, 10 a.m. every Saturday moving forward. Can't wait to be a part of your Saturday morning. So a lot of great college football content as we put out each and every football season. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray, back later this week on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.